Welcome to the Peter King Podcast. Happy to have you for another week, my second podcast of the new training camp season. I'm coming to you from Orchard Park, New York, where I've just spent a good practice day with the Buffalo Bills in the dog days of training camp. It was a hot one, but that's what training camp is all about. And, you know, the couple of things that I'm going to talk about with training camp this year and with what has been happening around the league is I think there's this great mystery, this great cloud because of COVID and what's going to happen or what isn't going to happen. Much of it basically has been centered around the Buffalo Bills. Everybody thinks that they could be distracted by it. I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And I'm also going to be talking about the Kansas City Chiefs and what I saw on my trip to Chiefs training camp. But we're also going to have two very good guests this week. Patrick Mahomes, the former Super Bowl and league MVP, heading into another season after he tells me, basically, that lost to the Bucs in the Super Bowl. There's a good chance that's going to haunt me for the rest of my time in the NFL. And then we'll hear from Justin Herbert. I talked to him on my trip to Orange County where the Chargers are having training camp. So we'll get to those interviews, but a couple of things I want to talk about at the top. You know, the first one, and I don't want to harp on this in every podcast, but I think it's important. You know, the quarterback of the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, came back to training camp this week, and one of the things he said when asked about, will you get the vaccine? You've tested positive now twice for COVID. Will you get the vaccine to try to get some insurance against this weird and unpredictable disease? And he said it's a personal decision, and he didn't really want to talk. He did talk about it some, but he didn't want to tell anybody whether he is or isn't going to get the vaccine. And I just thought to myself, you know, if you're a quarterback in the NFL, you might think it's a personal decision, but is it really a personal decision? Because if Lamar Jackson tests positive and has symptoms, let's say on a Friday during the season this year, he's going to have to miss two games. He's going to have to sit out two games. So that's one-eighth of a playoff contender season. So you might just say, it's a personal decision and it's all up to me, none of your business. I mean, I think it is our business. I just do. And so I think that's one part of it. But the other part of it, I view it as encouraging that about 91% of the players in the NFL right now have gotten at least one shot. They're on their way to be fully vaccinated. No one is going to say, well, that means COVID's not going to be a big issue this year. It's going to be a big issue. At some point, some star is going to test positive and have to miss a game or games because of getting COVID. And so right now, I think as we look at the way the situation is around the league, you know, I think most teams right now are looking at this as we've done everything we can. They might be saying, well, we still have hope that we can convince guy X, Y, or Z. But if you haven't gotten it by now, I don't see much of a way that those numbers are going to move up. There are going to be six or seven guys on average on every team, basically, through training camp anyway, are not going to be getting vaccinated. So that's one thing. The other thing, in more football sense, that I wanted to talk about before I bring you Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, I wanted to talk about something I saw in Kansas City. You know, I wrote about this a little bit in my column, Football Morning in America, this week. But, you know, you go to training camp and you look out and you just see, okay, what's different here? What are we watching? And I looked out and all five offensive linemen were new. None of them started last year. Only one of them, Lucas Niang, the right tackle, who may or may not win the job, but he's starting right now. Every single one of them was not, other than Lucas Niang, who opted out last year because of COVID, every one of them is new from last year. And I think what that tells me two things. They really like those players, and they had a big need after Patrick Mahomes got ransacked in the Super Bowl. But the other thing is, I think it's important when you think about the way the league is going right now, it's important that your quarterback be listened to, that your quarterback be sort of respected when it comes to the players on the team and how the team reacts to that quarterback. And I'll give you a perfect example. You know, in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers feels like the Packers aren't paying attention to his wishes. It's one of his receivers, Jake Kumerow, right here in Buffalo, who's probably going to make the roster and be the fifth or sixth wide receiver. And Rodgers was ticked off when he wasn't there, but he was as ticked off that he wasn't asked for his opinion when they cut Jake Kumerow. And I think now when I wrote about this week, when you see Patrick Mahomes' respect for his coach, Andy Reid, his GM, Brett Veach, and Brett Veach's respect, obviously, for Mahomes, I think that should be the model that NFL teams use during, when dealing with their quarterbacks anymore. You know, the one other thing about Kansas City that was really interesting, I thought, is that they are really built to be a continuum. They are not built to say, okay, we're going to win this year and maybe we're really going to go in heavy to win the next 2 years. If you look at the way this roster is plotted out and planned, you see a roster that is built to, sort of go down the road with Patrick Mahomes as they bring in young players. They bring in players who they think could be long-termers with Patrick Mahomes. Case in point this year, Trey Smith, the right guard, sixth-round pick. The real reason he was picked by the Kansas City Chiefs is that was their last pick in the draft. Had they not picked him in the sixth round, he would have either signed somewhere else in free agency or maybe somebody else picks him in the seventh round. But I find it so interesting that the Chiefs have the kind of respect for Mahomes and he has the respect for them. That is the way to build a team in 2021 football. So let's get to Patrick Mahomes, who I talked to in St. Joseph, Missouri the other day. I think you'll enjoy his conversation.
So Patrick, many topics to discuss, but I've got to ask you first about your Whataburger franchises in Kansas City. You're a Texas guy. I know a lot of players from Texas swear by Whataburger, like In-N-Out guys are in California and everything like that. Tell me why you went Whataburger.
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, being from Texas, you have a lot of Texas pride. And Whataburger's kind of at the forefront of that. And I've always ate Whataburger since I was a little kid. And then when I got older, I'd babysit my brother. And there was a Whataburger literally down the street, and we would always grab that and kind of have that while my mom was working. And so whenever I got to Kansas City, that was the first time I had really been out of Texas and didn't have Whataburger all the time. And so I ended up talking to some people, and we ended up making it happen where we're going to have a lot of locations out here, and I'll have a little bit of Texas here in Kansas City.
That's pretty cool. So you also bought a partial stake in the local pro soccer team, Sporting Kansas City. Why have you bought a stake in both the Royals and Sporting Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of a long-time vision for my future. Obviously, being in Kansas City, being in this community, and seeing the people that we have here, I know that I'm going to be here for a very long time. And I have a love for other sports as well. And I love baseball, obviously, with my dad. My fiance, Brittany, played soccer professionally overseas. And so I've developed a love for watching soccer. And to see those people and those organizations and how they're ran, I get to look in on it at an early age. I know once football's over, I'll want to still be in sports somehow. And so what better way than looking through other organizations that have had success in this area that can kind of give me a little insight into it.
You really want an NBA team in Kansas City, don't you?
Oh, I do big time. And we have the infrastructure. We have the fan base. If you look at Lawrence and how we support the University of Kansas, that we'd have the fans out there. So it's just about trying to get a team here. And we'll see if we can make it happen in the long run. But I'm excited for what we have now.
Have you been active at all in trying to make that happen?
I have a little bit. I've talked to some people and tried to see what's the chances of us getting a team here. And it's a long-term vision that hopefully will happen over time. But, I love watching basketball. I watch the Mavs a lot, being from Texas. Luka Doncic and all those guys go to work, and I think Kansas City would be a great place for a team.
I want to ask you something about the Super Bowl. After the Super Bowl, I looked up the stats, and you were hit or significantly pressured 29 times in that game, which is a Super Bowl record. No quarterback was ever abused that much in a Super Bowl. which was natural. You had a lot of guys out on the line. It was a makeshift line. And yet, knowing you, you're still probably really angry about the way the offense played and about how many points you produced in that game. How do you look back on that day?
Yeah, I think you look back on that day and you have to learn from it. I think the biggest thing, when you get beat like that by obviously a really good football team, you have to look back on that and see that you can't come not 100% ready to play every single day. And we had injuries here and there, but everyone has injuries at that time of year. And for us to not go out there and be able to even get in the end zone at all, it's something that will haunt me kind of for the rest of my career. But you learn, you get better from it, and try to make sure you're ready to go. And whenever you get another chance at it, you don't go out and show out like you did that time.
How physically healthy were you that day with your foot, the injury to your foot?
Yeah, I mean, it was hurt. But I mean, it was hurt kind of throughout the entire playoffs. I knew I was going to have surgery after the season. I knew that it was going to be right after the season as quickly as possible. And it was going to be a rehab process of a couple months. And so to me at that point, there was nothing that was going to hold me back from being on that football field. And I felt like if I could have played better earlier in the game, it might have kind of lessened the pressure that we got throughout the entire game. And so it kind of, that's how football works. If you don't come out ready to play, you can get your tail whooped anywhere.
So in the time after the game, you have surgery. What is the status of your toe and your foot right now?
Yeah, it feels good now. I mean, this is the best it's felt since the play right before the playoffs last year. I've been able to go out here. I haven't had to take any days off. Haven't had to take any plays off. Whereas in the spring, a little bit with the OTAs, when I was doing some of the sprint outs, we'd kind of let Chad go in and do that type of stuff. So being able to do that and take the constant pressure of every single day running and being on that foot and not having any setbacks, we're in a good spot that hopefully we can keep building and keep being better by even season.
When you look at your offensive line now, the one that you're practicing with right now, what do you think? Is it a work in progress? And what's the chemistry like there?
I think that's been the biggest, I don't want to say surprise, but really surprise for me is the chemistry that they built so quickly. When you have a lot of new guys, I mean, in that whole entire offensive line room, and then with our starting five, a lot of new guys on that group, to see them kind of come together, they're hanging out, they're having dinners, they're eating with each other every single time I'm out here at the lunchroom here. And they've become best friends. And so they've already started to build that chemistry. And obviously there'll be bumps here and there where they're learning how we do things here compared to where they were at. But you can see that fight and that passion that they have for this game. And I think they're already really good, and I think it's going to get even better as the season goes on.
As you've watched the NFL this offseason, there's been a bunch of drama with quarterbacks, with Russell Wilson, with Aaron Rodgers. And I sort of look at you, and I'm sure, I mean, you're a lot earlier in your career than those guys are. But when you look at your place with this team, your relationship with Andy Reid, the coach, and Brett Veach, the general manager, seems almost golden. What is your relationship with those guys like, and why has it turned out to be so good?
I think the biggest thing is, I mean, they really want to win, and so do I. I think whenever you look around the league, every guy that's kind of had some stuff happen this offseason, they just want to win. They want to win Super Bowls. I mean, that's what you want to do in this profession. If you feel like it's not being done, you're trying to do whatever you can to get there. And having Coach Reid and having Brett Veach and knowing the commitment they have for this organization and to win, that's what allowed me to sign the contract that I did, is I knew that those guys were going to be around. I had talked to them before that, and I know they're going to surround me with great players and a chance to win every single season. And we hold each other accountable. And we go out there and we try to do whatever we can to win every single week. And that's why I think that we have this relationship that we have.
One of the things that I think is neat about your relationship with Andy Reid is that you suggest plays that he ends up calling in the game. I mean, what play, if you can think of one, really sticks out that you said, hey, coach, what about doing this? And then you thought about it and went through the process and you ended up using it.
I think, there's a couple. I mean, the one that sticks out to me was, I don't know if you remember, early in the season, we had that play against the Chargers where Tyreek kind of ran like a triple move, and I sprinted out to the right and threw him a touchdown. It actually went off a route that we had ran against the Chargers in the year prior where he had ran a double move and they had covered it really well. And I kind of went up to Coach Reid and I was like, you think we have time to let him do three moves? And obviously you have to have a guy like Tyreek, you have the offensive line blocking really well, and you got to be able to stretch it out. But it's just stuff like that. I look at stuff that we do in the game and in games prior, even stuff that Alex did when he was here, and I say, you think we could do it this way or that way? and he has no hesitations on trying it. I think that's been the biggest thing. There's some of them that we run that don't work at all, that we don't talk about, but he always will give me a chance to try it because he feels like if I believe in it, I can make it work.
Yeah. Two other things I'm curious about. I always like to ask quarterbacks in training camp, what did you do this off season to be a better football player?
I think the biggest thing that I've done, obviously you look back at the way you play, but I look at other guys around the league and I see how they've had success, especially guys like Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, the guys that have been doing it for a long time. And you see how they evolve over their career. You see how it kind of starts off and it's kind of a lot of just talent and just kind of trying to figure out how to make it work. And then as they kind of mature into their primes, it's that connection of talent and being able to know the position. And I think that's what I'm trying to do is I think I've done a good job of learning every single year, but I want to be able to make it easier on the field by just knowing the position. And I think that's somewhere that I can continue to take steps forward. And then other than that, just physically trying to make sure that I stay in shape. I'm not going to say I'm old yet, but I'm getting older in my career. I can't just go eat fast food all the time. I have to eat healthy, hired a chef, done all that different type of stuff to make sure my body's in the best physical shape possible.
Tom Brady is 19 years older than you are, and he's going to play football this year, and they've got a good chance to win a lot of games, as do you. Could you see yourself playing football at age 44?
I mean, I want to. I know it's going to be hard, but I think with the way people take care of their bodies is important, and if you take care of your body and stay healthy, which is hard to do in this sport, but you stay healthy, I feel like my want to and my motivation will always be there. So I'll go out there, and as long as my body holds up, I'll play as long as they let me.
We'll end with this. When you think back on the Super Bowl and how it can sort of feed you and motivate you coming into this year, is that true or is that just sports media nonsense?
I think there's a little bit of it. I think the sports media kind of amplifies it sometimes to make it a bigger thing than it is. But I think one thing that you take of how we got beat in the Super Bowl is I think everybody will know that we can't come in with this lackluster attitude, like we're just going to win every single game. I feel like at times last year, we would have to battle at the end of the games to win games. And it's because we didn't start or we didn't continue to put on the pressure that we need to do in order to win in this league. And so to kind of get beat like that and on the stage like that, I think you'll have guys ready to go every single game, knowing that any single week in this league, anyone can get beat by anybody.
Patrick Mahomes, have a great year. Thank you.
Thank you.
My thanks to Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, on a personal note, you know, this is the kind of person that I have found Patrick Mahomes to be early in me getting to know him a little bit. And look, everybody always says, well, you know Mahomes. I don't know Mahomes. I talk to him 3 times a year. I mean, that's not knowing somebody. But what I really appreciate about him is that I reached out to the franchise when I was doing my replacement columns, my guest columns this summer. And I said, listen, I'm going to write about Therese Paylor. And Therese Paylor, for those of you who don't know, he was a football columnist for Yahoo Sports, 37 years old. He is black. And he's been a friend of mine. I was not close to Therese, but I was getting to know him more and more. And this year, on the day after the Super Bowl, Therese Paylor died. He was only 37 years old. So his loss is felt, obviously, in the sports writing world, but it's also felt where he lived in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes knew Therese Paylor well. They had a great relationship. And I reached out to the Chiefs. Would Patrick be willing to write a short essay, 600 or 700 words, for the top of my column on Therese Paylor, a tribute column to Therese Paylor, and basically trying to get people to donate money to a scholarship fund at Therese Paylor's alma mater, Howard University, which I thought was so important for a very single reason. I started covering the NFL in 1984. I'd go into a press box. I mean, there might be 150 people in that press box. Maybe 3 of them were black. And now I go into a press box, and if I go into a press box with 250 people, and I'm generalizing, maybe 30 are black. So progress is being made, but it's still not nearly enough. And so I wanted to make sure that people understood that, and I asked Patrick Mahomes. He agreed to do it, and he did it very, very well. And I really wanted him to address that aspect of it, the fact that we need to see more black reporters covering the NFL. And that's one of the reasons why he wrote this piece for my column and why he is such a big advocate for the scholarship fund at Howard for Therese Paylor. He wants another generation of sports writers who don't look like me to be able to find homes covering the National Football League and, quite honestly, to just be writing about anything leaving college these days, because journalism is so important. Anyway, my thanks to Patrick Mahomes. You should know that. And you should know that, hey, look, it didn't take him 3 days to do this, but he took time out of his off season to do that, and I am appreciative. So let's go on to my conversation at Chargers training camp last week with the rising star quarterback of the Los Angeles Chargers, Justin Herbert. Question I've wanted to ask you for months is, week two of the season last year, you're standing there, you're backing up Tyrod Taylor, and all of a sudden you're told you're in. You've never played a live snap in the NFL in your life, and now you're having to go out and play against the Kansas City Chiefs. Can you take me back to that moment and describe what it was like, and then what you're thinking going on the field at that moment?
Of course. I think it's one of those moments that, you know, I've looked to my entire life, and being able to go out there and play football in the National Football League against the reigning Super Bowl champs, I don't think it gets much better than that. And as quickly as it happened, you didn't have to worry about anything. You just go out
there. How quickly did it happen?
It was maybe 15 to 20 seconds before kickoff, and you didn't have to worry about it.
Who told you?
Just go out there. It was Coach Anthony Lynn. So he comes up to me, he goes, "You're in." And I didn't have my helmet, so I had to go get my helmet.
Did you ask him why?
No, I just said, all right. And because we were about to receive the kickoff, and so I needed to get the play, I needed to get my helmet, and there was things that needed to happen really quickly, so I had to run over there and get it. But it was a lot of fun, though.
And then when you went out to the huddle, did anybody say anything to you like, hey, kid, what are you doing here?
Yeah, I don't think any of them knew. Hunter Henry, for the first time when he saw me out there, he almost said, you know, what are you doing out here? And I just said, you know what, run the play. We're going to run the play, and I'm going to hand it off, and we're going to get 5 yards. So that's kind of how it went down, but it was kind of funny out there.
Did anybody on the defense say anything to you at that moment?
A couple of guys. It kind of started spreading throughout the sideline, and I remember Joey came up to me, Joey Bosa, you know, slapped me on the shoulder and said, all right, it's time to go. Like, it's up to you now. And you know, I just remember thinking that, like, oh, it's my turn. You know, I get to go out there and play football. And to have the support of those guys out there made it a lot easier.
And then did anybody on the Chiefs say anything to you when you came up to the line?
No, no one said anything. It was really quiet, and especially with no fans out there either. It was kind of a weird introduction to the NFL, but it was funny the way it worked out.
And last thing, that first series, you drive for a touchdown against the Super Bowl champions. What do you remember particularly about that series?
I remember my first pass was to Keenan Allen, and I sailed it over his head. I was so excited. I ran out there and threw it probably 10 feet above his head, and he came back to the huddle and he said, all right, calm down now. You got it out of your system. So we come back and ended up completing a protection, like a little check release to Josh Kelly for about 40 or 50 yards and flipped the protection. And that's kind of when I was like, you know what, calm down, figure it out. You know, maybe we can do this thing. So it was cool.
And then you run it in for a touchdown.
Exactly.
Right,
that's, it wasn't supposed to be scripted up like that. We had, you know, I think it was Josh Kelly in the flat, another tight end on an over route, but the linebacker sunk, so I just took it in. But
and then you go to the sidelines afterwards, and what's it like?
It was just awesome. I get to go sit down with Coach Pep Hamilton and Shane Steichen, and we get to talk about the drive, and just remember that feeling of scoring your first NFL touchdown and being able to celebrate with them.
Yeah. Here's the other thing I wanted to ask you. So you obviously are aware that you became kind of a sensation last year. Everybody talking about how great you are, the next Fouts, all that stuff. How do you handle that with knowing that in this offseason, you've got to learn a new offense and you've got to get better as a player?
It's a lot of outside noise, and I think you have to practice it. And I was thankful enough growing up in college and having this mindset training with Coach Feld, who kind of taught us that it's just noise and listen to who's important, what's important, and I think your coaches, your family, your teammates, I think that's what's most important. What they're telling you is the truth. And anything outside of what's going on in the program and in the business, it's just noise. And I think we've done a great job of practicing that and repping that. And especially with all the things on social media right now, you know, it's a pretty negative place. And if you can stick to what's important to yourself and what you know is to be true, I think you've got a good step ahead of everyone else.
Do you pay attention to social media much?
I do not.
Yeah. Is that healthy?
I think it's for the best. Yeah. You know, I think it's real important to go in the film room. If I'm going to get chewed out from Coach Lombardi or Coach Day, you know, I think that's probably what's best for me instead of looking on social media.
Yeah. Tell me, what's one or two things in this offseason you did to get better?
I worked a lot on my footwork, a lot of my drops from under center. And, you know, I think this offense is a lot more balanced between gun and under center. And I think Coach Day and I, we worked a lot, you know, in the weeks coming up to this right now and working on our under center drops and having a good feel for the pocket, being able to step up, find the pocket, and being able to throw off platform. Because a lot of throws in the NFL, they're not perfectly scripted.
You spent some time this offseason with Drew Brees. So I assume part of that was about quarterbacking, part of that was about golf, part of it maybe was about your new coordinator, Joe Lombardi. What was your experience with him like?
You know, it was awesome. He got to come up and sat in through one of our meetings, and we just kind of talked about the offense, and him having been in it for so many years, he's got such a great feel for the offense, for the line, the routes, the timing, and he just had so much great advice to give to the quarterbacks, and just having him in the meetings and just kind of talking and having fun about it, it was super helpful.
Were you supposed to play golf with Tiger Woods the day of his crash?
I was, and so was Drew Brees.
And so you were just sitting there at the golf course waiting?
Drew Brees was actually, he was there that morning. I got the call maybe 11 or 12. I hadn't headed to the course
okay.
yet, but I was on my way pretty soon.
Kind of a bummer.
I feel horrible for him, and I'm just praying that he's okay. And I've seen some photos of him walking and crutching around, so I'm glad to see he's back up on his feet.
You had a golf tournament in the off season, and maybe 16 of your guys went there. And what I heard was really interesting, that everybody got up crack of dawn so that you could go out and play. What'd you play, 9 or 18 as a team before the tournament?
We tried to get in 18. Sun came up at about 5:37, so we woke up at 4:30, headed to the course, got some shots up, and played pretty quickly because we went in groups of two. And so we started early, and then things started getting going about 8:30, so we had to hop off the course and get going. But
what did it mean to you that all of your guys, I mean, you're a young kid, you're in your second year, that you had such great, cooperation with your golf tournament? I know that's a big deal to players.
It was awesome, and to have their support, that meant the world to me. And just for them to kind of go out of their way to come up to Eugene and hang out and support a great cause, kid sports, which I kind of grew up playing, and it was awesome.
Yeah. Last thing. So you've got a head coach who's obviously very young, one of the youngest coaches in the league. And he seems to almost, I followed him around the complex today, he kind of speaks the player's language. You know, he's calling Chris Harris his G and all this. And I wonder, what has it been like early on with Brandon Staley?
He's done such a great job building relationships with his players. And that's one of the things that he came in early and said he wanted to establish. And I feel like I've got a great relationship with him. I can go to him for anything, and I know he can do the same thing for me. And, he cares about all his players, and he's a smart guy, too, and he knows exactly what he's doing. And the defense is dialed up. They're doing a great job disguising their looks, and, it's going to be a lot of fun to play for him.
Isn't it crazy that 5 years ago he was a Division III defensive coordinator?
It's a lot of hard work to get to where he is now from there, but I don't doubt it because he's a hard worker and he's a smart guy, and I know if there's ever a problem, he's going to get it solved.
Justin Herbert, good luck.
Thank you very much.
3, 2, 1. My thanks to Justin Herbert. He's growing in stature, and he's a good man who I think can really deal with the pressures that a young quarterback has to deal with today, the weight of a franchise on his shoulders. Last thing, I wanted to just throw out one point. Look, Josh Allen got this gigantic new contract, 6 years, $258 million, I think. But basically, Josh Allen's going to be playing football for $2.5 million a week for the next 6 years. And you think about that and you say, wow. And the one thing I always wonder about, Will money change the guy? Will he be different because he just won the NFL lottery? And I've asked a lot of people that question. And obviously there's nobody who's going to say, oh yeah, he's going to be a bum. He's not going to work anymore. He's arrived. He knows it. So everybody says that. And Allen obviously is insistent, which you'll see in my conversation with him at NBCSports.com. But I found a really interesting point was made by Jordan Palmer, who obviously is his tutor. He works with in the offseason. And he told me that Josh Allen this year was not consumed by getting more money. He talked and worked toward fixing what he did wrong in their biggest games last year, the games that they lost, especially against Kansas City. And Palmer said he's one of those guys who just isn't going to say, I got my money now, I'm comfortable. Again, everybody's going to say that. I understand. And time will tell. But I think if I were the Buffalo Bills, I would have made the exact same decision that they did. Pay the quarterback now. And in part, the money for quarterbacks never goes backwards. As the Dallas Cowboys found with Dak Prescott, it always rises. So get it done now. So instead of paying them $50 million a year or a year and a half from now, they pay them $43 million a year and do a better job for the long-term best interest of the Buffalo Bills franchise. Hey, that's it for my podcast this week. Thanks a lot for joining me. It's really windy out here in Orchard Park. I hope you haven't been too distracted by that wind, but enjoyed bringing this to you and come back next week. I don't have any idea what we're doing next week, but whatever it is, we're going to have a good time. I'm Peter King. Have a great week, everybody.